Hello, respected viewers. It's George from Ireland, and here I am on Oxford High Street, and there above my finger, that's 69 High Street. And that is where Jeremy Thorpe rented a room when he was at Oxford University. So Jeremy Thorpe, best known for having been leader of the Liberal Party from 1965 until 1977. Anyway, Thorpe was born in 1929 into an upper-class family. They didn't actually have an aristocratic title. He used to fantasize that he was descended from a medieval Lord Thorpe, who was Speaker of the House of Commons. And I think one of his ancestors, his putative ancestors, was murdered during the Peasants' Revolt. There's no evidence that's true. So he was a fantasist and a fraudster. And indeed, on the order of service for his funeral, they had that coat of arms from that noble house of Thorpe embossed. Moreover, his ancestors came from a totally different part of England from the part inhabited by that Lord Thorpe. There's Thorpe Le Soken, or there's Thorpe Park in Surrey, various places with that Old Norse name, Oslo Torp being a Norwegian airport and so on. So more about Jeremy Thorpe. Anyway, I want to focus on his time at Oxford, really. So he came up here in 1947. In those days, it was national service. All young men having to do 2 years military service, they could opt for the Army, the Royal Navy, or the Royal Air Force, but they didn't necessarily get their first option. Or indeed, if they came to university first qualified as doctors, they could be medical missionaries in the colonies. Remember, the British Empire was very much extant back then and was assumed to have a very long way yet to go. What else? Obviously, there were exemptions for those who were physically disabled or conscientious objectors. So he just left Eton at the age of 17, passed his responsion, as in that was the entrance exam for Oxford University from the 1820s to the 1960s, as in Latin, Ancient Greek, and maths. They didn't have to do English, but the Latin and Ancient Greek questions were in English, and some translating into English, as well as translating English into the ancient languages. And he worked for one term at a prep school. In those days, you could get a job teaching, even if you didn't hadn't been to university at all. And then he was going to do his national service, which he really did not want to do. So he had petit mal epilepsy, and he did survive basic training. He was sent to Portadown, Northern Ireland, for NCO training, because obviously he's far more intelligent and educated than most people. Surprising, he wasn't sent for officer training, but he was not naturally officer material in all sorts of ways. But then he feigned a blackout and bedwetting to be ruled unfit for military service altogether. So he managed to come to Oxford, having spent about 2 months in the army. So he was elated with the way he'd tricked them. Yeah. So he came up here to read law, Trinity College, Oxford. I'm not sure why he picked that one. His father, if I recall, been to a different one and practiced at the bar in Manchester. Who died in 1945, just after Thorpe came home from 4 years as an evacuee in the United States. So Thorpe was thinking of a legal career, but he was not a very good undergraduate when it came to law. He threw himself into the Oxford Union Society, as the debating society of Oxford University, and indeed he was elected president. The Labour government had just been swept to power in the landslide victory of 1945. Now, the undergraduates here were then about 90% male, mostly from upper class or upper middle class backgrounds, quite conservative, but there was a bit of youthful radicalism in the air. So more than a few members of the Labour Party, the Liberal Party had reduced to only 12 MPs. The thing is, its days of might were only a generation earlier, and there were still some Edwardian era dons who remembered that. Jeremy Thorpe regarded David Lloyd George as his grandfather, even though he's no blood relative. So Lloyd George, the Prime Minister, he died in March 1945, and his son was a National Liberal MP, which was effectively conservative. The National Liberals were fully absorbed in the Conservatives in the 60s, and his daughter Megan, elected a Liberal, soon turned her coat and became a Labour MP. But Thorpe had thrown himself into the Liberal Party. Now, in one way, it was a cunning move, because it was easy to be a big fish in such a small pond. But had he chosen to be a Conservative, he may well have been Prime Minister, because his contacts in the Conservative Party were almost second to none. Bear in mind, both his father and his grandfather had been Tory MPs. It was his maternal grandfather, John Norton Griffiths, who'd been a Conservative and Unionist MP, known as Empire Jack, for his advocacy of all things imperial. Thorpe was actually very much an anti-imperialist and saw the dissolution of the British Empire, and really thought the Commonwealth was a force in the world, but he was very deluded in that regard. So he was so concentrating on politicking and debating that he neglected his studies, and he had to get help from George Carman, who later became a very distinguished barrister and indeed Queen's Counsel, who died in 2002. And Thorpe and Carman didn't have much to do with each other after graduation, but they came back together in 1979 when Carman defended Thorpe successfully from the charge of conspiracy to murder. So Thorpe was a gifted mimic. He had a fantastic sense of timing, and he was someone who was exuberant, debonair, ebullient, a marvellous public speaker, witty, but actually very false. Something of a gay Boris Johnson. What was beneath all this performative persona? What was the true character of Jeremy Thorpe? It was difficult to determine. So there seemed to have some sort of carapace of theatricality about Jeremy Thorpe, and he projected that here. So he ended up graduating with a third class degree. In these days, you would not have any legal career with a third, but there were not that many people who had law degrees at all, or degrees of any kind. In those days, only about 2% of the population went to university. And so getting into the bar was not competitive so long as you passed, but obviously you had to have money. And he had plenty of family money. He'd grown up in a house in Kensington with several servants. His mother was his most stalwart supporter. She was actually a conservative in her convictions, but she was even more pro-Jeremy in her convictions. So she resigned from the Conservative Party and she joined the Liberal Party to do everything she could in furtherance of her son's career. And this she was successful. So that's how he got himself onto the Liberal candidate list very early, standing in 1955, alas and alack, without success. He'd even been to see the Home Secretary at that time, just before the 1955 election, who was Willem Lloyd George, as in the son of David Lloyd George, to try and convince him to introduce proportional representation. Now, turkeys don't vote for Christmas. Why would the Tories introduce that electoral system when proportional representation was doing so well for them? And indeed, they did call a snap election just after Churchill retired. Sir Anthony Eden, the new Prime Minister, with a honeymoon, with growing economy, austerity was over, almost all rationed items had gone off the ration and back onto the free market, and so the Conservatives were returned with a handsome majority. So southwestern England was about the only growth area for the Liberal Party back there. Then for some reason the Liberals were relatively popular there. Was it some old radical tradition or the nonconformists down there, because they say communicants of the Church of England were more likely to vote Tory? There's an old Disraeli adage saying the Church of England is the Tory party at prayer, which is an overstatement, but there's some truth in it. Whereas nonconformists were a bit more minded towards the Liberals, and there weren't major cities, so trade unions weren't very big there either, and trade unionism and urbanism are things which make people tend towards socialism. So that's why he was able to unseat Conservative MP in 1959 for Devon North, the seat he held until 1979. It was regained by the Liberal Democrats in 1997. That's a little bit about Jeremy Thorpe's time here. He always managed to be slim despite eschewing sport. He used to dress in a style two generations earlier. So he's notable for his sartorial eccentricities. His trademark was his Homburg hat, because I think it was his aunt's husband who owned a millinery business. And though he was therefore a walking advertisement for that business, always wearing these things. So he was unfailingly, impeccably turned out. He seemed much older than he really was. So you can see photos of him in the Oxford Union. Right, so he got to know Tony Benn, who was a major figure in the Labour Party for many years, and helped him out later by lending him a room when the Liberals had to elect a leader in the 1960s. By that stage, the Liberal Party was down to only 6 MPs. All right, so that's a little bit about Jeremy Thorpe at Oxford. Thank you very much for watching my video. Make sure you subscribe on Patreon, donate on PayPal. Toodle pip, everyone.